Hey, this is October 29th, Dallas Snyder's Thursday night.
Questions and answers.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I behold you through the eyes of love, you radiant beings, you gods and goddesses. Here we are at the end of another month, and we were doing this month no more excuses, which means coming up with excuses that your mind will throw up at you, why you're not getting what you want, why you're not where you are. You have to be very prudent with this mind and be able to become a witness to your own thinking. That's why we passed out the rubber band, so if you start down memory lane, you can flick it. If you start into the future, you can flick it. You can do anything that you want with this rubber band to learn, to train your mind to think the thought that you want it to think. Now, I'm going to tell a story on myself and with the rubber band and how your mind works. I was driving along very peacefully, and my mind said to me, "Your cousin never called you back." Well, your cousin never calls you back. You should never call him again. You should never talk to him again. Da 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 da. Flick the rubber band. You have to. You see, we set up scenarios in our mind, and we just let those scenarios run and run and run. They mean absolutely nothing. They waste your time, and they cause a great deal of harm to you and to your life, because I happen to like my cousin. But if I allow my mind to keep telling me, it will tell me all the bad things about Dennis that I don't want to hear, you see. So we have to take responsibility for that. That's what we do. That's what this whole teaching is about, is training your mind to think the thought that you want to think and to feel the feeling that you want to feel. We're not taught that anywhere else, that we have that ability. You must train this mind. We were created and put down here on this plane of action without directions. And the direction that we are missing is that this mind of ours is very powerful. It's the only thing that we really have that we can control. And if you're not getting what you want in life, it's because of some kind of thinking that you're doing to yourself. Nothing ever goes outside of yourself. Nothing ever goes outside of yourself. A lady called me about her cat. This lady's been calling me for years about her cat. She's had I don't know how many over the years. And she said, the cat is sick. And she said, "What can I do for the cat?" Well, besides loving the cat and keeping it comfortable, you can't do anything. It has to be done inside of you. You cannot cure the cat. You have to cure your thinking of what you're thinking, that the cat is sick. It's done in your mind, not in the mind of the cat. You see, the same way with human beings. If you want to heal a human being, you heal yourself. You do not heal the person. You cannot take anything outside of your mind. It's an illusion. Anything that's going on outside of your mind is an illusion. You have to correct that so that you see what you want to see. So you have to hold that cat, not only in love and compassion, but you have to see the cat as whole, complete, and perfect, and in perfect health. But if you keep saying, "Well, my cat's sick, what am I going to do about this sick cat?" Well, the cat's going to remain sick. And that people are going to remain sick. If you think you're sick, you're going to remain sick. I'm not saying that sickness does not happen. But I'm telling you that there's no necessity for it. There's no necessity for it whatsoever. We bring the necessity into the life with our thinking. And we buy into what we call the race mind out there, who's always telling us we're falling apart and that we need some miracle drug to get us through all of this. So with health and wealth and relationships, creative self-expression, the four corners of your life, what you have to know about those four corners of your life is that God is always the source and God is always the supply. You go there. You do not go outside of yourself. You change your mind. When you change your mind, everything around you changes. So, and here again, we're talking about this thing of recognizing that you are some part of God, that God would be incomplete without you, that God is absolutely necessary to you, and you are absolutely necessary to God, that the whole universe would be out of equilibrium if you were not here. You have to know how powerful you are. You have to know that you're absolutely wanted, you're absolutely needed, that this whole thing would evaporate without you. It needs you to continue. Why? Because you have something very special to offer. You just haven't found that yet. So look inside of yourself and keep asking yourself, what is my specialty? What is my talent? What is my passion? Then, this thing where I'm always finding little things about becoming God, becoming more and more like God. So here's a new one. We're not here to conquer others, wage war, build towering temples to our deities, become number one, win anything, or defeat anyone. No, we are here to be godlike, or to be good, to serve, reach out, allow, not interfere, and be humble wherever we go. So many people want to know, how do I become godlike? Start to be good. Good and God are the same. There's only a no missing there, you see. But it's synonymous. God is good, and good is God. So if you don't can't bring your mind at this point to say that you're heading towards godhood, then bring your mind to the point where you're heading towards goodhood, where you're just becoming better and better all the time. Okay? Now, many people about manifesting and so forth want to know why they are not getting what they want. Well, first of all, stop wanting all the time, you know. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and all else will be added unto you. When you want and want and want, you set up that frequency of wanting, which pushes things away from you. You have to know that this thing called God knows exactly what you need. Knows exactly what you need. Let God do the work. That's the whole idea of letting go and letting God. But here's a new little twist on this. You do not attract what you want. You attract what you are. You see, you must become the thing that you want. Always. If you want a lover, you must become that lover. If you want somebody with all these different traits that you write down, you must develop those traits. And then that matches in vibration. So then you get what you want. So make compassion be what you are. Be compassionate. Not only to other people, but to yourself. But to yourself. Because the more you treat, and then you say, well, I'm not getting it, I'm not getting it, and your mind tells you you're not getting it, but you say, but I do have faith, I have this, that, and the other thing. But you let that mind keep telling you, but it's not here yet, it's not here yet, it's not here yet. I can tell you that it is here. You just have to take the blinders off your eyes to be able to see it. You have to be able to change your mind in some way. So, what I do, you have to sit down and love yourself. And just keep loving yourself. You know, it's always going to be that answer, people. You know, that's why when I said there's only ever one problem, it's a God problem. Your God is not big enough. So if your God is not big enough, you must kick that God out and get a bigger, better God. You see, this is what you do. This is how you make things work. If they're not working, it means your God is too small. So find a bigger God. It's the same God. When I say find a bigger God, you have to get a bigger concept of what God is. You have to get a bigger concept of what you are and who you are. And give up all those old ideas that you have about yourself. Give up all those old conclusions that you have about yourself. And it will start. But become what you want. Become that. Start to see that. Use this mind to think about what you want, to contemplate what you want. But start developing the feeling of how it will feel. How will it feel? Remember months or years ago, I said, wake up every morning with the feeling that you're successful. You see, you have to wake up feeling successful. I don't care if you have a job, you don't have a job, or whatever. It has nothing to do with that. Now, here again, you're looking on the outside of life. You have to look at the inside of life. And you have to wake up feeling successful. If you don't wake up feeling successful, what do? You make yourself feel it. You make yourself feel it. You go, I don't feel that. I don't feel that. Well, of course you don't feel it because you're not even giving it a try. You must do it, you see. This thing called God absolutely will meet you halfway on anything. We must always take the first step, or we must take that action step. When we go towards God, God comes towards us. So, that's that one. Okay, Danny. I invite the presence of God to be with me in the form of my passion. You may read that and hand it to Rhoda. And then we'll go around.
You want me to read it out loud?
Oh, yes.
I invite the presence of God to be with me in the form of my passion.
I invite the presence of God to be with me in the form of my passion.
And I invite God to be with me in the form, the presence of God to be with me in the form of my passion. This whole idea of becoming God or becoming godlings and seeing yourself as that, it's always practicing the presence of God. Practicing the presence of God within you. So when you want to do anything, an affirmation, a treatment or anything, start with the idea, how would God approach this? If you were God, how would you approach this? Not how am I approaching it, but how would God? Then start to think all things are possible with God. God can do this, 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 therefore I can do this, this, and this. But you have to practice the presence of God. You have to see God everywhere, in everyone, and in everything. It's very simplistic, but that is the way it works. So we don't. Many people only pull God out at special occasions, you know. God, the presence of God is all around you. It's always going to be around you. You have to start noticing that. And you have to start practicing the presence of God. So how would you practice the presence of God? By using this wonderful gift called your mind and that part of your mind called your imagination. Use your imagination. How would God handle this? How would God see this? Would God have compassion? And when your mind tells you something different, you know perfectly well that's wrong. You know, I have to hate this person. No, I'm not going to do that. You're going to listen to your mind. I'm not going to call my cousin because he doesn't call me. Is this practicing the presence of God? Absolutely not. So I get my old rubber band out and I snap it. So I snap myself back to the presence of God. That is as easy and as simple as this teaching can be. It's always practicing the presence of God in the moment, in the now, right here, in this room, not far away someplace. Okay? Now with that, I'll open it up for questions. Who has a question? to pertain to anything, but usually try to keep it to this. Go ahead.
If I've done something wrong or bad, what's metaphysically speaking, what's the proper way, or what's the best way to proceed?
The best way to proceed in that is to realize that it's a mental world we live in, and nothing is good or bad, but the mind make it so. So you have to change your mind about that. You have to forgive yourself, and then you have to practice the presence of God and say, how would God handle this? God only sees good, by the way. God does not see bad. God does not see evil. God is not an evil. It's not an impossibility. Does that help you? Next. Go ahead. He's got a list. You see, maybe he's not going to list.
Sometimes when you're like experiencing new information, like it's some, like the mind wants to shut down and make you sleepy and not hear things.
Yes.
How what can you do about that?
Well, always you must become aware of that. It's called diving, by the way, and your mind takes a dive. How do you take a dive? You see, I knew perfectly well when I'm teaching a class or giving a lecture, if people have to go to the bathroom, they go to the bathroom exactly when I'm going to tell them exactly what they need to know. Because the mind will always keep you from knowing what you need to know. That is as simple as that. That you have to pay attention to your own mind.
I have a question. When you were talking about get yourself a bigger God, what I was hearing you say, you didn't say the word, but it was like get a bigger image of yourself, a different image.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
I get a different image of yourself, get a different image of God, and so forth. You see, most people think that God, all they know of God is what they heard from other people. They've never experienced God from themselves. They say, well, this is what the Bible says God is. If you read the Old Testament, what is God? Mean and hateful and revengeful. Now, the loving God does not come into the world until the New Testament. So we get rid of that. We got rid of that. Now you have to get rid of this God. Now if you have a God of all love, then you have to build on that. What does that mean? All love. All knowing. All. You see. And then you have to know that same thing. Along with you, when you're having a difficult thing with your mind, you have to know that I'm using the mind of God, and that mind of God knows exactly what it's doing. When I was in school, I used an affirmation. I have a good mind and I can get my work because I know that that mind comes from God. You're safe. You have to know that you have a good mind. No such thing as a bad mind, people. No such thing as a stupid mind. Can't be, because there's only one mind, and that's the mind of God, and that mind is all-knowing.
I would say I tended to focus on my attributes.
Yes.
Rather than dip. When I do dip, it's that's in the past.
Right.
Now is a new starting point.
Whatever you want to come into your life, focus on that. If you're focusing on all the bad parts of you, you're going to get more of those. You're going to get more of those. So look for all the good qualities in you and magnify all the good qualities. Years ago, I lived with an Italian family, the Gucci's. And Mrs. Gucci used to say to me, Dallas, there's always enough good in people to cover up the bad. So always remember that. There's enough good in you to cover up the bad. I don't care how bad you think you are or what you think you have done. There's enough good to cover that up. And you must focus on the good part. You must focus on the good part of that.
I don't know much about the Bible.
Well, the New Testament came after the birth of Christ. You see, before that there wasn't. When the Messiah, what they call the Messiah, came, then the New Testament started.
Okay. and the disciples wrote it.
But the disciples, yes, they say wrote different things down. We don't know. There wasn't anybody running around with a microphone and a recorder and all that kind of stuff. There's all kinds of things about the Bible. Bible is a wonderful book, by the way. And it's lasted over 200 or 2,000 years, I think 2,500 years. And if you read it metaphysically, it reads much differently. If you take it literally, you can take it that way, which many people do, Baptists. But it's written on level after level after level, which is the idea that in my Father's house there are many mansions. Soon as you learn something new and you stretch your mind when you read the Bible reads differently. And it's going to continue to read differently. Now, the Bible's been changed and shifted and done all this. Most of the stuff in the Bible has, well, all the stuff in our Bible, whichever one you have, I happen to have what's called the Jerusalem Bible. I don't know if anyone knows about a Jerusalem Bible. It has two Bibles and one going on at the same time. But most of that's an interpretation and so forth. We don't know, you see, anything about. We don't know if any of that really happened. It's a story of mankind. If you read the Bible as the story of your life, the story of your mental life, you will understand it much better. All the stories in the Bible are allegories. They're all allegories going on. But they help us to see things differently. And here, those same allegories, you see, the same problems, the same emotions that we are having today, they had in biblical times. They had the same thing. See, that's why we keep repeating ourselves. We have to realize that we can change our emotions, we can change our thinking. That's what it's all about. Does that help you?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
What do you mean when you say love yourself? Like, describe that.
How to love yourself? Love everything about yourself. Every little wart, every little thing, every little follicle. Everything. Just love yourself. You're a miracle. You know, but we sit there and we say, oh, my finger's bent. You see that one finger? I won't put it up because it's okay. But that finger's bent. Now, I could hate myself for that bent finger. But I said, oh, isn't that wonderful? I love that bent finger.
Acceptance.
Yes. Yes. But you have to just really love yourself. Love is always going to be the answer, and it's going to be love of yourself. It's not going to be love of anybody else. It's not going to be love of God. If you can't love yourself, you cannot love anybody else. If you can't love yourself, you cannot love God. Loving yourself is the highest form of worship that you can give God. Look at yourself as a wonderful miracle. See all the things that are going on. As you sit there on these chairs, look at all the wonderful things that are being processed in your body. It's just an absolute, you're living in a miracle machine. You know, food's being digested, you know, carrots turning into a fingernail, all kinds of things. And no one knows how that's done. There's not one person, the brightest person, who ever lived, or who ever will live, what doctor, scientist, or anything. They have no idea how you can eat a carrot and it can become a fingernail. It's called transmutation, and we're always transmutating something in our body, but we don't know how that's done. So, therefore, we have to think that there's a higher power somewhere doing all this for us. Otherwise, how does it get done? You see? So this is what you have to see, what a miracle life is and what a miracle you are.
Like to go with loving yourself, and then the adventure matter before, like near work and from near. And like for me, I was whenever I do that, I always kind of like after I try to love myself, I saw these like screaming speakers that have all of that tapes. So like, is there a good way or to kind of quiet that? Or
yes, wear a rubber band on both wrists, so that you get high five or. But you see, what this young man is telling us here is very beneficial for everybody. You are noticing what your mind is doing to you. Now you have to say, ah, mind, I hear you, and I know that I am not you. Where did you come from? So go back to the nothingness from whence you came. Don't do this to me. Keep doing that in the mirror. Keep doing your mirror work till your mind no longer taunts you with that. You know? And it will stop doing that. It will stop doing that. But this is the training that you have to have. And then we giggle and so forth because of embarrassment and all that kind of stuff. You have to realize that that's a cover-up. Anytime that anyone laughs at something, through embarrassment, it means you've hit home and you're covering something. Your mind is covering something. You see? So notice. Notice what your mind is doing to you. You see?
Last week I was with some people, and this woman said, "Oh, I'm so bad, I'm taking all these desserts." And I couldn't help it, and I said, "How does that make you bad?"
Yeah. Because somebody told her that, of way back when. Tell the class, Rhoda, the one that you have about the lady who, the 90-some-year-old woman, and she was still the mother, and she worried. That was a job.
My friend's mother lived to 102, and she was lucid, her mind was fine, and she would always say, "A mother's job is to worry." And I said to her when she was about 100, I said, "I don't think that a mother's job is to worry." She got very upset. "A mother's job is to worry." Well, she taught her daughter well. Her daughter taught her daughter well. And it was passed on through the family.
Yes.
So she really believed that.
This is this mind virus, these memes that we talked about at the beginning of the month. We pass these viruses on to the next generation. So that woman passed it on. It's a mother's job to worry. And you just pass that stuff on. You pass it on to the next generation. So don't do that to yourself, and don't do that if you're having children and so forth. The other thing to remember is parents with low self-esteem cannot raise a child with high self-esteem. It's an impossibility. It's an impossibility, but yet so many parents have no self-esteem whatsoever, and they're raising children. Now, how do you think those children are going to get where they're going? They're not going to do that, you see? I talked to you at the beginning of this class, and many times I tell you this, don't have an imitation of life. You know, people used to be very proud to be able to say, "Oh, he's just like his father. He's just like his father." Now, that may sound like a compliment, but if you're just like your father, then who are you? You see? If you're a unique expression of God, why do you want to imitate your father? Most people are imitating their parents, or they're imitating somebody else. You see? Be yourself. Learn to think for yourself. Do that. I tell the story, my hometown, a small town called Duncannon, Pennsylvania. Population 2,000. We had a friend of our family's. We called her Aunt Matt. She left Duncannon. She was away about 20-some years. She came back and she visited my mother. And my mother said to her, "Well, Matt, has Duncannon changed much?" She said, "You know, I just finished walking downtown." And she said, "What I have noticed is this. The bar stools that used to be filled with the parents are now filled with their children. Because we repeat. We repeat." And small towns do that, especially small Pennsylvania towns that were connected with the railroad, but the worst ones are the ones that are connected with coal mining. Those people very rarely get out of that situation. It's generation after generation after generation. They work all day or all night in the coal mine, and they go right to the bar, and they drink till they pass out to go home. The next generation does the same thing because it sees that. It just keeps seeing that and seeing that, and they just keep repeating that. We had a family of friends called the Kaufmans. They lived in Coatesville, Pennsylvania, and that was a steel mining town. They lived on a street called Fleetwood Street. In front of their house was this very large mountain-like and across that ran a railroad. When you went to their house and stayed overnight, the whole house would shake when these trains came. So the mother and father, Paul and Relda, Paul worked for Lincoln Steel. They finally saved enough money to move in Coatesville to a place on the park. And their house overlooked a park. I remember going there. I just loved it. It had a swimming pool, the whole works. They had made it, right? Now their children, the two sons, Chip and Mickey, graduated from high school, went to work for Lincoln Steel, and moved right back onto Fleetwood Street and started the whole process over again. We imitate. They're called memes. They're called mind viruses. Watch out for them. And then we pass them on to the next generation. We pass these things on. So, it's done with your mind. You have to be diligent. You have to become a witness to your own thinking. Being able to see, what is my mind doing to me? What is my mind telling me? And why do you think your mind has such an authority over you? Remember when I was started this 30, 35 years ago, Mom, when my alarm clock would go off, my mind would say, and I'll use this illustration. This is my mind, it would say, Dallas, get up. You're never going to make anything out of yourself. You're nothing but a rotten, lazy lounge lizard. Now hit the deck. Now the hit the deck part, I remember, would be my father. He was in the Navy. Hit the deck. Now, all that mind chatter, right? Now the last thing the mind ever says to you is, I was never here. So you're laying there in bed and you're saying, oh, I'm thinking it must be true. I thought all this stuff up and this must be who I am. This must be who I am. It's not who you are. Don't listen to the mind. The last thing the mind says is, I was never here. And it goes away. And you say, oh, why must that must be true. I thought all this stuff up by my little old self. You did not. You did not. It's just a mind trick. It's an absolute mind trick that happens. Does that make sense to you? Can you see that? So think of that when your mind starts. The last thing it's going to say to you is, I was never here, and it disappears, and then you think, oh my, I thought all this stuff up myself. You didn't. You say, you didn't do it. Then learn, when you hear your mind, where did you pick that up from? Where did you pick that mind virus up from? As soon as I heard hit the deck, I knew it was my father. It wasn't me, it was my father. And you have little expressions and little things that come into your mind that you know darn well somebody else put there. Get rid of them. Get rid of them. Most of the thing that what we grow up with is the whole idea that we're not enough and that we're less than. I don't care if you come from a family has millions and trillions of dollars. It has nothing to do with it. We grow up in that thing. Who was it that was talking to me? Very important. Who was it? Said, oh, my client. I have a phone client. I said, well, how's everything going? He said, oh, I hate to say it, but everything is wonderful. I said, why would you hate to say it? He said, well, we're not allowed to say things like that. And he said, I certainly wouldn't say that to somebody out, you know, to a common person, I suppose, somebody not into this teaching. The whole idea is for you to be able to say, life is wonderful. I'm wonderful. I feel good about myself. I love life. I'm glad that I'm having this experience. Can you imagine how your life would change if you approached it from there? That you approach it from there instead of letting your mind tell you, oh, well, I'm not good enough. I don't have this. I'm a little overweight. I should do this. I should eat. It's all ego. Remember what? We're not here to conquer. Go ahead. Others.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, I have a question.
Yes.
A spiritual advisor that I know said, we are all capable of accomplishing any and everything we want. If you want to be a Tiger Woods and even be a better golf player than me, you could do it. If you wanted to be a quarterback on a football team, whatever your desire is, all you need to do is believe that you can do it.
Yes.
Well, I said, this is what I believe. I believe that we were all given God gifts. Some of us have many. Some of us have fewer than others. But I think I said that I believe that it is up to us to recognize those gifts and develop them to the best of our ability. Because how can someone with spinal bifida become a football player? Or a child who is challenged, how could that child become a brain surgeon? And that's where I...
You were always stuck with that
one.
You're always stuck with that one.
I said this before?
Oh, yes. In many different ways.
Okay.
But you always come back to that because your mind cannot figure that out. You have to start with the premise. All things are possible with God. And if somebody has spinal bifida and wants to become a football player, I'm going to tell you that that's absolutely possible. But we say, and we hold in our mind, that it's not. That's a mind virus. Now that person picks up that mind virus and he holds that and says, I can't become this because I have this deformity. I have this going on. But many times we see many people with deformities that do absolutely horrendous things. We don't see, God doesn't see deformities. And we look at it because we think, oh, that person's not normal, meaning it doesn't look like us. Does everyone have to look like us? Does everyone have to do that? We don't know that, you see. But you cannot say that that's an impossibility. Otherwise, you can't make the statement, with God, all things are possible. It's very difficult. That's one that should be put on the shelf till we get more information and we let it go down. But I'm glad you brought up Tiger Woods, because I would say that Tiger Woods is absolutely a metaphysician. Why? And why is Tiger Woods so good at what he does? Well, first of all, he's found his passion. But he had a parent, he had a father who loved him, coached him, and told him that he could do it every day. The kid started at three years old to knock a ball around. Now, I hear people say, oh, it's like he wills that ball into the hole. Yes, he does will that ball into the hole, and you can do the same thing. Now, how do you think he wills the ball into the hole? He uses focus. You must hold your focus. He sees the ball going to the hole, and he holds that focus. And the ball goes in the hole. You can do this in your own life with throwing maybe a ball at a hole or something. If you do it and you just keep focusing, the ball will go where you want it to.
I brought up another example about myself. I said that I really wanted to be a ballerina.
Yes.
I studied, I practiced, I did everything I could do. I believe that, and because he said, oh, you believe.
Yes.
So I believe that I could do that. But in reality, I never accomplished that goal. I became a good dancer, but not a ballerina.
Right.
You know, I could do modern dance and jazz and all of that. But when I had to go on point, it was so excruciatingly painful for me because my feet are weak and my ankles are weak. I never accomplished that goal. And I believe that I could be a ballerina. So what's up with that?
Ah, maybe more exercise of the ankles, maybe more with that. But being a ballerina, and I knew many ballerinas, it's the foot problem and so forth. And many of them, you know, take a wooden mallet and beat their feet to make them numb so they can go on to point. So this is the thing. When you say you didn't know that? Yes, they actually beat their feet to make them numb so that they can stand up on point. Because human beings were not made to stand on point. Any movement in ballet, is abnormal. It's against the physiology of the body. The body is not supposed to be able to do those things, but yet you see, we do all those things. Yeah, we do all those things. I don't know if that answered your question or it didn't answer your question. But let me ask you this. Are you resentful that you didn't become all right? Yes, sir. Yeah.
Might the answer just be that the vision is different? That, you know, like a child that has disabilities and their the football player that they might become might just be a different version of... And then earlier when you asked that thought, I thought, how do we become that one step at a time is what I was hearing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As far as
we work there. So what you're saying really is that the child that wanted to be a football player really must believe it within himself of the possibility without the race mind entering into it at all.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to approach it again because a week ago or so, you were talking about, somebody asked about if I wanted to be a singer or something like that. You said, you could be musical. Now, you never might be Pavarotti. But, so how does that tie in here? If somebody really believed they were going to be, and I think you said, well, you'll be a singer, but you may never be.
That was somebody else.
That's
I didn't say that. That was somebody else that you were talking to, and you have them confused. I'm always going to come from the absolute solid foundation that all things are possible with God. And if you want to do something, you are able to do that. You're able to overcome weak ankles. You're able to overcome anything. It may take a lot of effort. It may take a lot of time. And even though we hold that and we want to do that, do we want to give up every minute of our life to accomplish it? A great singer gives up everything. Only singing is the only thing. And you see, I would love to do a lot of things. I don't, because I know I cannot give up the other things that are required to do it. Takes a lot. You have to give up. In the Bible, there's a sentence. You must maintain a single eye. Meaning, again, focus. You must only see one thing. You must only see one thing. And you see, and that's difficult for people because we see many things. So, as you were becoming a dancer and thinking about dancing, then you became a teacher, then you did this, and your interest changed and so forth. You did not keep the single eye. You know?
Well, I have many talents.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. But the people who are, you know, what we call the greats and so forth, they hold what's called the single eye. That's all they know and that's all they see. It's a single eye.
But how, on that subject though, how do you, you know, because I do a lot of things, they all are connected, but, and I think I'm totally focused on these things, but I can't cut out any of them.
Did I ask you to?
No, but I'm saying, like, how do you justify, a single eye doesn't necessarily mean.
Oh, a single eye means exactly what it says. And what you're saying is exactly what I'm saying. You can have all those things, but they're all connected to the one thing. You're not, if you want to be an actor, you're not off doing carpentry work, are you? You're always doing something that pertains to what you're after.
More or less. Sometimes not.
Like, say yes.
No, I'm not going to say yes. That confuses me. Yeah.
Well, I don't see why it's confusing. That you know what you want. You hold that vision of what you want. You maintain the focus. You maintain the single eye. Yes, you may have to do stopgap measures. You may have to do other things, but you never give up that singleness. That singleness of purpose, you see. And yes, you're going to have to do other little things to put in there, you see. Stop thinking that you're doing something wrong, people. Give that idea up that you're doing something wrong. I'm not doing this right, therefore, I'm not getting what I want. You have to know I'm doing this exactly right. Why? Because you're God. But your little ego mind, race mind, wants to say, you're not doing it quite right. If I adjusted this, if I just had one more of this, if I just did this a little bit better, if I just loved myself a little bit, if I did this, if I did this, if I did this, then, whew. Love yourself exactly the way you are right now. There's no other thing that you can do. There's no other thing that you can do. But we punish ourselves constantly because we think, oh, I'm doing something wrong or else this would work. Give up that idea that you're ever doing anything wrong. Say, I'm doing everything right. Then if you're not manifesting what you want, you sit down and you say, now listen, God, I'm doing all this stuff. And if I'm doing something, I need help from you. Give me the help. Show me the way. I always start with that. I always start with, I don't know a thing that I'm doing, but I know that you do, God, so show me how to do this. And I can tackle almost anything, and when I have that attitude, I'm absolutely amazed what comes into my mind and the things that I'm able to do.
But most of all, this teaching has just gotten me to the point of, what is it I want to see? What's the end result I want to see? And then I go to, what does it feel like to have that happen? So
yes.
And then it seems to follow some, you know.
You have to have the vision. If you want the new world, you have to see the new world. See, everyone would like the world to change. Is there anyone in here who thinks the world is running just absolutely splendid right now? Would you like to see a new order come in? You have to see that new order. You have to think that new order. You have to feel that new order. Then that new order will come. But that new order doesn't come because in the back of our minds, everyone says, that's the way the world is. It's always been that way. It'll always be that way. Look at the Middle East. As soon as somebody says, oh, they always fight over there. They've been fighting for centuries and they'll just keep right on fighting. There's nothing you can do about that. Yet we send troops. We send all this stuff over there. We send everything to change. It's not going to change that. A man convinced against his will is of the same conviction still. It's all done with changing the mind. If we want a new world to come in, if we want something to be different, then we have to start seeing things differently. Why won't the world change at the present moment? I'll tell you my theories on this. I'm looking outside and seeing a fire truck or whatever that is, the big red thing going on out there. So we say to ourselves, well, we have police, we have thieves. Or if we have thieves, we have to have police. We have sick people, then we have to have doctors. Then we have to have this, then we have to have that. Da, 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 da. We're making all that up, people. We made up this world. We made up all the occupations that are in this world. And if there wasn't an occupation when it started of people to keep that occupation going, it soon happens. It soon happens. You say, I want to be a policeman. Well, then I have to. There has to be thieves, doesn't there? I want to live in a safe world. Oh, you want to live in a safe world? Then why do you lock all these doors? What are you telling yourself every time you lock something up? It's not safe. Somebody's going to steal something from me. Therefore, there are thieves out there. And you know how the world is. Everyone's taking everything from everybody else. You have to think of these things. How many people go out the door and you say to them, be careful. If there's only God, what's there to be careful about? The devil? Satan? Hanging around a bush ready to jump on you? No, it's in our... These are the mind viruses. These are the things and the thoughts. And we have to think through all this. You have to see what you're creating and why you are creating it. But if you have locks, you're saying there has to be thieves. And that gives fear. Oh, I have to lock the house up. See, I never lock my house up unless somebody comes, it's fearful. If somebody comes, it's fearful. I lock that sucker because their fear is going to hit me up one side and down the other. And I'll tell you the story about fear and the sun. I had this beautiful apartment in Atlanta, Georgia, overlooking Piedmont Park. Friend came for dinner. I had the big balcony doors open and looking out over the park. Oh, aren't you afraid to live here? No, I'm not. Oh, I'd be afraid to live here. Oh, I would. After dinner, I said, you want to take a walk through the park? The whole time, oh, aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid? It was dark. No, I said, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. So, that evening, he stayed overnight. In the morning, my place had been robbed. Somebody came through the open balcony doors. They took my statues. They took my watch. They took rings. They took everything. Now I knew right away that it was his fear that drew this. So what's the crux of it? I immediately said, what is mine by right of consciousness must be returned to me or its equivalent. Police came. They said, you'll never get any of this back. You won't get this statue back. I had a beautiful bronze. You won't get this back. And I said, okay, fine, thank you, fine. I immediately started to do my treatment work. Took about 6 months to a year. A young lady in my office, I was in the real estate business, came in. Mary Beth Wallace was her name, and she said, Dallas, that statue of yours, she sold apartment buildings. She said, we were going through all the apartments in the apartment building. She said, I know that's your statue there. I called the police. They went and knocked on the door. And they said, can you identify this? I said, oh, absolutely. I said, not only does it have my name on it, my social security number has been etched on it. They brought it, knocked on the door and handed me the statue. This is a statue that they said, well, you'll never be able to find it. They probably pawned it, blah, 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 blah. I never believed a word of it. So after he handed me the statue, I said to him, where's my watch? He said, we didn't find a watch. I said, well, it's got to be there. Well, it was two roommates, and the one roommate wasn't home when they picked up the statue. They found the other roommate on the street, and he had the watch on. Now they said to me, how can you prove that that's your watch? I said, well, I can prove it because it has my name on the back of it, which was my father's watch. And I said, not only that, which his name was Dallas Snyder also, I said, it also has his dog tag numbers from the military on that watch. And they called and said, it's here at the precinct, come and get it. I went and got it, you see. Fear draws so quickly, it will draw something to you. So quickly. So what's the crux of that? Don't allow people around you with a fear. If they are, I should have known enough to shut the balcony doors. That was my mistake. But then I did not get upset. You have to know that what is yours by right of consciousness has to be returned to you or its equivalent. And another young man, people in Atlanta knew I could do things. He came home, and he had a condominium that was up for sale. So the neighbors thought that he had sold it because a truck drove up. Mm-hmm. And they took everything, every stick of furniture, everything out of it. Nothing when he got home. He called me. I said, Mark, sit right down and affirm. What is yours by right of consciousness must be returned to you or its equivalent. In 2 days, the police called and found every stick of it in a warehouse. Every stick of it in a warehouse. It's a mental world we live in. A mental world we live in. I'm going to laugh here in a moment because Dallas over there is fanning himself. In this room, which is fantastic, usually what we're freezing to death in here. We're shivering, but tonight they have the heat on. It's very pleasant. So anyway, it's a mental world. Use this. Now, when I'm able to do these things, if I'm not special people, God does not show special people. You see, we're all special to God. God does not show favorites. So if I'm able to do this and prove these things, you are able to do the same thing. You are able to do the same thing. All things are possible with God. And you have to know that. What happens with those things like theft and so forth, if what goes on in your mind immediately is it's gone. You must never say that. There is no loss in the mind of God. God knows where everything is. You say, at the present moment, when I can't find something, I say it's mislocated at the present moment. I never say that it's gone. And as soon as I calm down, it pops up right in front of me. It pops up right in front of me. You know? My car is open at the present moment. My home is open. I often forget to put my wallet, take it out of the car, and it stays in the car all night, and when I go down, the wallet is still there. Not suggesting that you people try this unless you are able to keep fear from your consciousness. You see. I was taught by a man by the name of Kennedy Schultz. And he usually gets so mad at me. He said, would you stop, Dallas, testing the universe all the time? You see. Don't test the universe unless you know. Unless you're absolutely sure of yourself. You see. I'm not suggesting you now, you know, leave your cars open and leave your house open and do all that kind of stuff. If I went to East LA or wherever Watts is or something, I certainly would lock my car. I certainly would lock my car simply because of the thought atmosphere in that neighborhood. You know, we have thought atmospheres. We go in and out of thought atmospheres all the time. The thought atmosphere is there that people steal. People do things there. You see, it's very hard to get out of that thought atmosphere. So you have to feel what atmosphere you're in, and you have to feel what people. You see, I never don't talk to that person anymore who was so filled with fear that thieves would come into my house. You know, I don't want people like that around. No. Mental world we live in. Any more questions? Yes.
A lot of us, you know, who are artists and actors and producers and all that.
Creative people.
We do creative people do a lot of, you know, deferred work, you know, and with the, you know, hope of that, you know, someday it'll, whatever it is that we're doing, we'll make money, you know, and there'll be a return on that. And so is there any kind of an affirmation or any kind of a thing that would help that, you know?
Yes, there is.
You're putting out a lot of energy. You're putting out a lot of...
You must be paid for it. And what actors do and so forth is they do all this thinking that it will return to them at a greater time. If you're using your creativity, you must know that you have to be paid for that. And you make that statement immediately to yourself and to other people. You see. Do not give yourself away. If you give yourself away, you'll keep giving yourself away. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it
makes sense, but it's...
Again. But everyone's afraid to do it because they say, oh, well, then I won't have anything to do in this, that, and the other thing.
But it's not like... sometimes it's a project that everyone's agreed upon. We're going to do this together, and then, you know... No, it'll sell, or you know.
Well, you have. Is it? Did it?
No, not yet.
And that's what you have to know. You have to be sure of that before you invest your time. The only thing we have in this on this plane of action, and we all of us have the exact same amount, it's called time. You're selling your time all the time. You're not selling anything else. So you have to think of that. And we love to give this stuff away, and we love to say, oh, well, it's going to come back to me. You don't do that to yourself. Figure out a way. Say to them, I would love to do this, but I need paid for it. And let's see how we can make money out of this. Let's see where the money's coming from. Mm-hmm. You say, creative people love to do that because they love to be creative, you say. And most artists have a mentality that they think they have to suffer and live in a garret. And now I'm a real artist because I'm suffering and I'm living in a garret. Don't do that to yourself. Say, I have creativity and I must be paid for that creativity. I must be paid for that creativity. I don't know how many people knew Robert Bitzer. Robert Bitzer had the Hollywood Church of Religious Science. He was a contemporary of Ernest Holmes. He had the first church from Ernest Holmes after he did work with Ernest Holmes. Anyway, he lived to be, I told you this, he lived to be, I don't know how old, 7,000 years old, it seemed to me. He was really old. And he would give a talk, a Sunday talk, and he would never say, and now it's time for collection. He would give his talk and sit down. And the money would come to him. Because he maintained this in his mind, I have done the work, and now I must be paid. I have done the work, and now I must be paid. In his church, a collection plate was passed, but it wasn't passed with the idea, now we're going to take collection, and before we take collection, we're going to do this affirmation that it comes back to me multiplied abundantly, pressed down and running over, and oh, let's get enthusiastic about this whole thing. When you do the work, you have to be paid. That's the law of the universe. That's a law of the universe. But we like to give ourselves away. Does that help you?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but again, it's not...
Because of the industry, and because you're going to tell me that is not the way it's done.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's what you're saying is done all the time. People get paid all the time.
Yeah.
They always get paid. I'm saying that a lot of people... In fact, this is done all the time, where people invest in something, and, you know, that they feel like it's it could sell. You know, so now what I'm asking you is that it's a little late for that. Now it's already done. Now the project's here. It's done. Okay, so nobody got paid up front.
Right.
Okay. So what I'm asking you is there anything that can be done to so people could get paid? You know, any kind of an
application. Oh, after it's done.
Yes.
Oh, after
it's already done. I'm not talking about
before. Oh, what? Yes, mm-hmm. I have done the work, mm-hmm. and now I must be paid for that. Mm-hmm. I was creative. This is a good project. Mm-hmm. This is worth money. Now, sit and see it coming to you. Know that you must be paid. The universe pays you for those things. Yeah.
What was it?
Yeah. Okay, I got convoluted there, I guess.
Yeah, it was probably me.
How about thank you for the money I'm about to receive?
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And then see that money and feel that money and where are you going to take it and how's it going to the bank and did you write the check out and all those kinds of things. Mm. Yeah. I have time for one more question. We're running away over. I just wanted to, yes, I was hoping you would ask it.
The idea of, you set an intention for something you want.
Yes.
But I've always heard and read that you have to let go of the result. Like, you have to release the result. Like,
yes.
You decide it, but then you let it go.
Well, you release the result because you don't know. Because if you say, this is how I wanted to do, and this is the result that I want, now you're placing a hindrance on God. All things are possible with God if you let God do it. But if you say it must be done in this way, it must come to me through this, and this is the result that I want, you're not. That's that's putting a hindrance on God. That is limiting God. This thing. So what you do with that, you have to know that regardless of the highest thing that you can think of for yourself, the best thing that you can ever think of for yourself, God can give you something even better. So you release that and know that God can do it. And once you get the better, you'll never remember the other. You just don't remember it. You have to know that.
Right. But keep focusing on that. Keep seeing it.
Always keep seeing it.
Yeah, not the details and how it's going to play out, but just the...
Right.
You know, the kind of
yes.
broad, even...
Even broad, and even... But with that, you have to... You keep what you... In your mind, what you want.
Yeah.
But know that it's God can see something even better for you that you cannot imagine.
Well, it's always that or more.
It's always that or more, and it's always to the best of all those concerned, and that is something that people forget. You see, when you're not getting something, I look at it this way. This universe has to take every little down and change it so that when you get what you want, it's not going to take good away from anybody else. You see? So it's the best for all those concerned. This universe is a delicate, delicate thing. You know, the universe, if I get up and walk from here across the room, the universe must make an adjustment in gravity for me to be able to do that. Otherwise, if we all went to that, we'd fall. There's always adjustments going on to keep everything in equilibrium. So God is doing all this and watching over everything. And knobs are turning. When I want to make something or manifest something, I put it out there and then I just envision all these knobs and dowels and all these things clinking and clunking and going on until they fit so that it's the best to all those concerned. Pass out this paper. Let me say one thing about this. The only thing I'm going to read here is the first part. By the way, this man happens to be 61 years old. The first thing he puts down on this, fitness expert, right? Train your mind. It's the biggest muscle. Put it to work and get on board to a plan your workouts at board to plan your workouts and help you make healthy choices. If you visualize yourself as a person you want to be transformed into, nothing can stop you from getting there. Now, I'm going to tell you a quick little story. They did this research work on maids in a hotel. Half the maids just did their work. The other half, they told the maids, now while you do your work, think of it as exercise. The ones who did their work and thought of it as exercise firmed up, lost weight, and become healthy. The ones who just did the work and thought, I'm just a maid, I'm not just a... making bed, stay the same. Train your mind. Train your mind. You see? If you tell your mind, the work that I'm doing is doing this, the work that I'm doing, it will do that for you. It will do that. Mental world. Mind. Watch the mind. Okay? Right. Well, that's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I, and there ends the lesson. Thank you.